Succession number 20613, Reel 1.
Cush Common, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Coldstream, Berwickshire.
Which year was this?
1930.
Did both your parents come from Coldstream?
Yes, I do like it.
And did you grow up and have your schooling at Coldstream?
Yes, I did, though.
Which school did you go to?
Coldstream Public School until I was 14.
So that would have been 1944?
1944, yeah.
So you spent all the war years in Coldstream?
I did, yes.
Did the war much affect Coldstream?
Well, we used to hear the aircraft going over to bomb Clydeside, and there was the odd bomb fell round in the Coldstream area, and of course there being airfields in this area, there were quite a lot of crashed planes.
Did any bombs actually fall in Coldstream itself?
Oh no, they fell in what was called the cow field, just down there, about half a mile away. But we all went and picked up shrapnel, just like any other kids.
Any celebrations at the end of the war?
Oh yes, there was great celebrations.
What did they consist of?
Oh, bonfire in the park and fireworks and drinking if you were older.
Did you have many servicemen around the town?
Oh, a tremendous amount of servicemen. A lot of them had been territorials, of course.
How did they behave themselves?
Well, they didn't. They were here at the end of the war, of course. And if you were really unfortunate, like my wife was, your father didn't come home. Because he was a member of the local regiment and he was killed in Burma.
That's the King's Own Scottish border?
King's Own Scottish border. Where one of my uncles served in Ireland, but he was in the Royal Artillery.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
Well, you had to do national service, of course, at that time. After the war, I started national service, and everybody had to do, to start with, 18 months. But as I was serving my time to be a plumber, I got deferred until I finished my time at the age of 20. And the week I was called up for national service, they increased the national service from 18 months to 2 years and made a differential in the rates of pay between a national serviceman and a regular soldier. A national serviceman got 28 shilling a week and a regular soldier got 49 shilling a week. And as I came from a big family, I did what a lot of national servicemen did, left money to my mother, which was 10 and 6. Well, 28 minus 10 and 6 leaves you 17 and 6, so it's not a lot of money.
So what was the first step once you got called up?
I had a brother who had been in the Highland Light Infantry in Palestine from 1948, but at that time was in Egypt. When I was called up, I went to Fort George at Inverness to do my training, which was the Highland Brigade training centre at the time. The reason being, when I'd first had my first medical, my brother had been in the Black Watch and had put down to go to the Black Watch, so I was sent to the Highland Brigade training centre to do my training there. And thereafter, joined the Black Watch in Berlin after 6 weeks training.
How did you take to the training?
Oh, I didn't. I didn't like it. Didn't like it very much. Well, of course, it was a busy place, you know. There were thousands of soldiers there, you know, and of course a lot of the people were ex-wartime men, you know. But when the Korean War broke out about that time, July 1950, and the Z reservists came to Fort George to be kitted out, a lot of them were reluctant soldiers, of course.
What was it that you objected to in the training?
Well, it had been a tradesman, you know, it was, the food wasn't very good. You know, I don't like to moan about my national service, but the food wasn't very good. And sleeping in a hut with 20-odd other men, with, although I came from a big family and had never had a bed to myself until I went in the army, sleeping in a room with 22 other blokes, some of whom you wouldn't have passed the time of day with normally, you know, it's hard going.
Were you able to do all the things that they expected you to do in the training?
Oh, yes. I started work at the age of 14, and I was a plumber. And as all the men were away to the war, except the old boss, you had to use a pick and shovel. And, you know, a plumber was hard work anyway, so I was fit. And not only that, I mean, I'd always fished and poached and, you know, so I was pretty fit compared to a lot of people.
What had the poaching consisted of?
Well, catching rabbits up the woods there, and pheasants, and fish if you're lucky.
Did you use a firearm?
No. I'd never fired a weapon in my life until I went to Fort George.
How did the people in charge of the training treat you?
They weren't bad. A lot of them, you know, it's the same in all walks of life. You get goodies and baddies. Some of them were bloody bad, but other than that, on the whole, I got on all right. I was very quiet, of course. You know, I was a shy country yokel, you know. And I got on all right.
And after the basic training?
I think we had 7 days leave and then off to Berlin, which of course then, I mean, it was train from Inverness to London, from there to Harwich, and then boat train to the Hook of Holland, and from the Hook by train to Berlin, part of which of course was through the Russian zone, which you had to travel through at night with the blinds closed on the train.
What happened to you in Berlin?
Oh, well, Berlin at that time, 1950, it wasn't very long after the war, and the streets were still full of rubble, you know, they were clearing the streets of rubble and that, and it was, you know, it was a bit of an eye-opener. Tremendous amount of damage. But when we got to the battalion, the Black Watch, in Montgomery Barracks, Berlin, well, the barracks were, you know, far away, a better standard than the barracks are in this country. You know, I mean, most of the barracks in Germany had been built between 1933 and the start of the war, so they were all, I mean, double glazed and parquet floors and showers, and, you know, very good.
Which battalion of Black Watch was
first,
it?
The 1st Battalion Black Watch. It was commanded by Bernard Ferguson at the time, who of course had been famous as a chindid during the war, a gentleman of a man. There was a lot of ex-wartime men still in the Black Watch, of course. Very, very smart regiment. Very smart.
Did you have much to do with the Berliners?
Not a lot. Not a lot, really, at that time. Although we did go, one of our jobs was to go down the town to another barracks, which was called Mackenzie King Barracks, and for internal security duties. But he literally hardly saw the natives at all unless you were travelling on trams and things like that.
What about the Russians? Did you have much contact with them?
Well, the only time we saw the Russians was if he changed guard with them at Spandau Prison. I see I think it was a month at a time, each different army did a spell at Spandau. The French, with the French, Americans, the Russians, and us. And of course, at Spandau at that time, there was there were 7 prisoners, you know, still there. Hess, of course, being the most notorious. Owen Shearer, Albert Speer. It was funny seeing these people, you know, after you'd seen pictures of them.
Do you have any memories of those prisoners?
No, not really. I remember clearly Hess, because he always wore a big, long greatcoat, which was turning greeny, you know. They never spoke to you. You hadn't anything to do with them, of course, you know. I mean, round Spandau, there were 7 towers, and the only time you were on the ground was when you were, if you were getting posted, and they posted you. I mean, you were locked down up the tower.
What do you mean his greatcoat was turning green?
Well, you know, right old. You see them in the country, old countrymen, they're old. The way their coats are hundreds of years old. Well, he was like that. A very eccentric bloke, of course, yes. Didn't much mix much with the other people, other prisoners. But we had nothing at all to do with them, really.
What did you make of the Russians?
Well, he didn't have anything to do with them at all. They just came, got to the bus, changed guard, and that was it. Of course, there was no wall at that time, 1950. He could go into the Russian sector at that time.
Did you do that?
Yes, I'd been on visits only, official visits. I once went and saw. And later, I don't think that was during National Service, no, that was later. Once I went and saw Wolverhampton Wanderers playing Vorwärts. But I think that must have been when I was there later on with the KOSBs in 1958-59.
What did the Russian zone look like? Any different?
Oh, they were peasants, you know, the majority of them were just peasant lads, just like yourself, very young, you know. Very young.
What happened next?
When the Korean War was on then, of course, and we shared the... There were 3 to a room at Montgomery Barracks, and they asked for volunteers to go to Korea. And the promises they made were... You'd be home for Christmas. Well, I hadn't been long. You know, I'd only been in Berlin for a matter of week, well, a month, a couple, 2 or 3 months. This was December 1950. And my brother was due back from Egypt, and not having seen him for a year or two, thought, well, the other 2 chaps and myself in the room volunteered to go to Korea. He couldn't. National servicemen up to group 5014 could volunteer. National servicemen were called up every fortnight, every 2 weeks, and he got a group number. Well, we didn't know when we saw it going up in company orders what 5014 applied to. And you're told to look inside your paybook and you find written in pencil what group you were. So we were 5014, which I take it was the 28th week. In 1950, 14 fortnights, 28 weeks.
And then what?
Well, they gathered us all together, the people that had volunteered to go to Korea, and kicked us out to a certain extent, had a great send off, and picked up another platoon in Minden, who had been Royal Scottish Fusiliers, came back to Cameron Barracks, Inverness, where it was absolutely... They put us in a gymnasium. The whole lot, I think it was 120 of us. It was very, very cold. It was really sparse conditions. And I got home the day after my brother. But there was snow on the ground. It was pleased to see the back of Cavern Barracks.
You were just in transit then, were you?
Just in transit, aye. And as we were going to the Argyles, I mean, I was a national service and there's a lot of us, but they had some of the volunteers were regular soldiers who the Black Watch weren't that keen to hold on to anyway. But when the rebadged us as Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, as we were going to the Argyles in Korea, the regular soldiers among us had a, well, they didn't actually, but they didn't want to. I mean, to start with, they had to hand in their kilts and Highland dress, and they didn't want to do that. In fact, it got to the stage where an officer, we were paraded on the square at Cameron Barracks, Inverness, and an officer stood up and I think he read what was the Riot Act. There was nothing physical at all. It was just grumbling. But see, a lot of the regular soldiers hadn't, you know, they'd volunteered to go to Korea, but they didn't think they would lose their regimental identity. And I see this officer got up and read the Riot Act.
Did it have the necessary effect?
Oh yes.
And then?
From Cameron Barracks, just after the New Year, we went down to Good Street Deep Shelter, which was a transit camp, you know, in Good Street in London. I had an aunt in London who I went and saw, and I think it was there 2-3 days. And from there we went to, I think they called it Cliff Piper, it's called Lynham now, to fly to Singapore, which is a bit of an adventure in them, because the aircraft we flew on were Hastings, which were only took 35 people, and left on a filthy wet night, and whether it was 6 o'clock the following morning, we were at Castle Bonito, which is the airfield at Tripoli. From there we went to El Adem at Tobruk. From Tobruk to Habaniya, which is where, outside Baghdad, or there Habaniya to Karachi to Ceylon, where we were only off the aircraft while it was getting refueled, of course. Ceylon, I can remember getting the most beautiful cup of tea when I landed at Ceylon. And they had to take 5 men off the aircraft because, I'm led to believe, they took on extra fuel to compensate for 5 men off, because they had to fly from Negombo, was the airfield in Ceylon, to Changi in Singapore.
Was that where your flight finished?
That's where the flight finished. We went to Selarang Barracks for, I can't remember how long we're there now. I would imagine we're there a week or two at Selarang Barracks, where we were getting acclimatised. And visiting Singapore, but with national service, he hadn't enough money to do very much. Although in Singapore he did get overseas allowance, I can't remember what it was, but whatever you got, it made a big difference to your pay. From Singapore we went by aircraft carrier, Unicorn, to Japan, stopping at Hong Kong, where we got off the boat. The tallest buildings in Hong Kong at that time were the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank and the Farmers Bank of China, which were next door to each other. I think they were 8 stories high. Of course, Singapore and Hong Kong and places like that were absolutely crawling with servicemen at that time. There were vast amounts of servicemen about it at that time. Then after a couple of days in Singapore, in Hong Kong, we set off for Japan.
I see.
By the aircraft carrier. And of course it was pretty rough, it can be pretty rough in these seas, you know. And we thought the Unicorn was a vast ship, but you know, it was just a small thing, that Unicorn. Eventually arriving at Hiroshima, where we were taken off by, I don't know, landing craft to Kure, which is a huge shipbuilding place, had been during the war. But we were in a camp outside Kure called Hiro. In that was the Commonwealth area of interest. Of course, you had New Zealanders and Canadians and Australians also in that area.
What happened to you in Japan?
Oh, well, same as happened. He grew up. We had to do guards at the dock, the docks for one thing, and it was there I saw the amethyst of the thing with fame, and an American cruiser, which I'm led to believe played the part of the Graf Spee in the film that was made about the Graf Spee.
So were you training in Japan?
Not very much. We did a bit of fire. Oh, climbed up the hills up behind between Hiro and when you see Hiroshima at the back, there's hills. We trained on these hills. I remember coming back for a route march one day when a bloke I was walking beside had. He'd got the DCM in the Arab Legion, in fact, was telling me that he'd been out the night before and the woman he had been with had only one leg. And of course, we're taking the piss out of him, you know. And finished up with no clothes, in fact. It was the first man killed in the KYSBs, in fact. Christ, here coming along the road was this woman with a crutch and one leg. But the food was good there. We're still rationing in this country, of course, you know. The sweet rations. You still had your sweet ration cars and things like that. But Japan was an eye-opener, of course. As I say, never having seen a ship in my life, you know. When you saw one of the places we called it was a place called Sasebo, which is down by... further south in Japan, and that's where the American fleet base. There was hundreds and hundreds of ships of every kind, you know. It's not an eye opener for it. And of course, when you're on the aircraft carrier, there's not much they can make you do, you know. So you spend a lot of time sitting about and watching the world go by. Fascinating. You know, seeing junks in the China Sea or the Yellow Sea, and sitting thinking, I wonder where you come from, you know. Or, haven't seen a junk in National Geographic or something, you know. Seen flying fish, and absolutely marvellous. Marvellous.
So, if you didn't do much training in Japan, did they get you straight to Korea?
Korea, I can't remember how long I was in Japan. It was, you know, it'd be a week or two. But we went to Korea to, of course, the highlight I got to Korea was when you arrived at Busan, went by boat from I can't remember who went for Curie to Curie to Busan. Of course, the front line was way up over the engine that time, but at Curie there was a resident American band, of course, to meet incoming ships, which was absolutely, you know, the great big black men playing. Oh, it was absolutely marvellous. But of course, Busan was a ruin too, a terrible, terrible country.
And then did you have to make your way to the front?
We were making our way up to the front. We got to a place called Suwon, where the train was fired on, I'm led to believe. I don't know how far we were going to go, whether we went to Seoul or where, I don't know, but we certainly never got there. And we got off at Suwon. And I think at that time, things were pretty. I don't know if the Chinese were actually attacking at that time, but I can remember going through Seoul, which was, a lot of it was burning. And arriving at the KOSBs and told they would carry steel helmets. I'd carried a steel helmet from Berlin all the way to this paddy field, and we're told to fling your steel helmets over there, take this one, and he was left with what you could, your small pack with a change of underwear, change of socks, your sand shoes in case you had to run away, your sand shoes, your mess tins, and that was you. That was, you know, he didn't have very much in these days, you know. Ammunition, of course.
Did you know you were going to the KOSBs?
Didn't at that time, but it was my local regiment, you see.
What do you remember next?
I can remember going very confused, of course. It was the KOSBs had just come off the boat that day or two before. And at that time, of course, the Chinese were attacking. We finished up at a place called Kapyong area, which was more towards the centre of Korea. And I can remember climbing, we climbed hills which I never saw the top of, on the top, because it was wet, foggy weather, and it was, you know, the Chinese, we weren't very much involved, in fact, but although the likes of the Middlesex Regiment and the Australians were very, very heavily engaged there, which you didn't know later, of course, didn't know years later. But we had to come down. You're digging two or three trenches a day because you were retiring. But I can remember sitting and watching a unit coming down the road, thousands of them, and it was the 6th Rocks, as we call them, Republic of Korea, who just bailed out. They were all very smart, mind you. They all had American helmets and ponchos, which we didn't have, and coming down this road in their thousands.
How did that make you feel?
Not very, but the conditions were hellish anyway. It was wet, you know, and you were tired, of course. You know, disoriented, didn't know where you were, or I remember coming upon New Zealand. Our gunners were New Zealanders, and we were dying of bloody hunger. And the New Zealanders had a big tin on the fire with cocoa, and they had British rations, of course, giving us a bit of cocoa and a bit of bloody cake with a tin. I've never been more thankful for anything in my life. But they eventually, we eventually got on the top of their vehicles, and we bailed out with them so far, and then went up a hill. I was up, Christ almighty, I don't know how high these hills were, but the conditions were absolutely hellish these times, because it was wet and foggy, you know. That was the first time I'd ever seen a man slap another man in the face. There was Koreans about at the bottom of that hill, and they were lined up.